Oh, here we are. Okay.
There he is.
Hey, John.
Which means? Mr. Stein, we got a spot for you.
That's right. Hi, John.
Kitty. Did he get? Not yet. Waiting for you.
Oh, what? Take my time.
You were up a lot later than I was. All right. I'll call the meeting to order now that we are all in our allotted stanchions. Guests also, I see. They're all sit in the same seat every time. Welcome. Why don't we, let's see, quickly zip around the board. Brian?
My name is Brian Napstead. I'm the chairman of the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Kate Knuth, EQB citizen member.
Ed Ellinger, Commissioner of Health.
Julie Gehring, citizen member.
John Stein, Commissioner of PCA.
Dave Fredrickson, Commissioner of Agriculture.
Bob Patton, Executive Director.
Katie Clark-Sieben, Commissioner of Deed.
John Saxhog, citizen member from Minneapolis.
Eric Tomlinson, citizen member.
Tom Landwehr, Commissioner of DNR.
And Anna?
Oh, I'm sorry. Anna Sherman, Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
That's fine. We can. You can yell it out. I think we know everyone anyway.
Craig Offelt, Pollution Control Agency.
Susan Heffron, tech rep for PCA.
Jeff Smizer, EQB staff.
Kate France, EQB staff.
Randall Doneen, DNR tech rep.
Jim Merkel, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy.
Travis Germanson, tech rep, Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Ray Kirsch, Department of Commerce, tech rep.
Thanks, Dwayne. Thank you very much. This is probably going to be the meeting of the century. Our agenda is pretty light today, so thank you very much for all of you. Yes, we'll moving right along for taking the time to be here today. My chair's report has just now been complete, and so I'll move to the executive director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will keep this short. I'm very impressed that and pleased that members are here today, given what the busy schedule that everybody has at this time of year. So I really appreciate that. Thought I, for my report, I'd just give a brief legislative update. The conference, Environment and Natural Resources Conference Committee, has been meeting, met last night. It will be meeting today, maybe meeting at this hour. the conference committee has not completed budget items, so we don't know the answers to the budget questions that are before it. I went over those last time. If somebody wants me to review where we stand with that, I'd be happy to do so. But they did finish up silica sand policy last night, and so I thought you probably read about it in the paper already, but let me just go over what was adopted by the conference committee last night. The conference committee did approve EQB development of the silica sand standards and criteria by October of this year. Also, assembly by EQB of a silica sand technical assistance team. And also the creation of the Library of Local Ordinances and Permits. And so those are all EQB duties that all need to be completed by October of 2013. Additionally, there is rulemaking, and this was the part that there was some significant work over the weekend and Monday on in terms of EQB rules, environmental review rules pertaining to silica sand. And so what has been adopted is essentially a temporary standard for mandatory environmental review mandatory categories. So silica sand mines and storage and processing that with it's 20 acres for the mining, and then there are some standards for storage, storage and throughput, some thresholds there that trigger environmental assessments. Those will be in place. They're statutory, or they're not statutory. They'll be in session law, and so there are legislative standards that will be in place for 2 years, and then during that time, EQB has a mandate and authority to do rulemaking, permanent rulemaking, and full-fledged rulemaking on those standards. And there's a differentiation of that those one of the considerations of the rulemaking is that whether that rule the original standards should remain in place, and also whether there should be differentiation of those standards for different parts of the state. And I hope Commissioner Stein will correct me if I get any of this wrong. Another big part of the whole effort was creation of a new permit category for silica sand mining near trout streams in the southeast, and this was the headline in the Star Trib because there of course was a proposed standard for or a prohibition of silica sand mining within a mile of a trout stream, and so the compromise position that did get adopted last night was for DNR permitting within that 1 mile, and that triggers a hydrogeologic investigation and so forth. So that was another significant part of the policy bill. I'll leave off there. Happy to answer any questions I can. I did bring the language with me.
For those that weren't around, you want to add anything to that?
No, Mr. Chair, thank you for the conversations of the permitting. I think Mr. Patton got it right that DNR's permit is a unique thing. It's a new form of a permit that can be issued following this hydrologic evaluation, and also that language got clarified to make sure that DNR could recover the costs of its work for that permit. However, the remainder of the financing of all the work that's in the bill has not yet been agreed upon at the conference committee. So there's still a lot of funding elements of the silica sand, as well as Mr. Patton's point, just EQB's role in general for the governor's recommendation and the House and Senate positions that have not been reconciled yet.
First step position, yeah. Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Landwehr, anything to add to that?
Just with respect to DNR permitting, it is still in flux, I think. I think there's probably the third time now we have a global agreement on what it looks like, but something happens and it pops back up. But I think there's something that all the sides could agree to, I think, that's out there right now. I haven't seen the latest draft of the language, but it does say within a mile there will need to be DNR approval. Approval can only be granted after the hydrogeologic study is conducted, which, as John suggests, will be paid for by the project proposer. And then we will have to adopt some criteria by which we would approve or deny a permit. So it does give us, it's a pretty open authority right now, and that's something we have to figure out as well. But I think it gives the folks in the southeast, especially those certain trout streams, some degree of comfort.
Right. Questions for Bob? Commissioners? All right. Jeff, we are ready for the discussion regarding the item 5 on the agenda, which is designation of a different RGU for environmental review of dredging of the navigational channel and the lower pool by the Corps. Jeff.
Mr. Chair, Might I suggest we approve the consent agenda?
You know, that's a really good idea, and I was thinking about that, yeah.
I knew you were.
But I tell you, I was so taken in by that beautiful necktie, I just forgot it.
I'll be sure to keep it on.
No, you could give it to me. You've never really owned anything until you've given it away, you know.
That's true.
It's getting thick.
I got to get my
Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda mindsets? I know.
I make that motion.
Oh, that's like I expected that you would. I bet there's a second somewhere around here, too. There is a second. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Now back to you, Jeff.
Minutes. You want to do the minutes?
No, I don't.
I knew you were thinking about the minutes as well, Mr. Chair.
I think we did the consent agenda, and that included
that includes. Got it. Thank you.
God, it's nice to be bright once in a while. We're ready.
All right,
Mr. They Chair. May not be, but I am.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the board, you know, your comment about the tie reminded me of a story of my undergraduate years as a history of the theater class in the theater. The instructor was an actor, playwright, and things like that, very dramatic guy. In the last day of class, we were asking questions, and he had this blazing yellow tie on. I was sitting way up in the nickel seats, you know, and I could see this tie. And so all these questions, I just had to do it. And I said, one more question. He said, what? I said, where'd you get that tie? And the whole place cracked up. And he said, you like it? I said, yeah. And he took it off and he said, come get it. And I ran downstairs and got it. I had it for years.
I missed my cue.
You know, the guy was not to be upstaged, right? He was an actor. He was not going to let some punk kid up in the gallery upstage him. So it's pretty funny.
I'd accept. Yeah.
Anyway, so the issue at hand, the RGU redesignation for a project. Just to give you an idea of where this is down in the area. You can see, of course, this is St. Paul here, downstream. Here's Hastings right down here. And this stretch of the river is where this is all happening. A little closer view, you can see the... I believe it's the navigational channel here that forms the border between the two counties in the middle of the river. Something I need to do a little research on and figure out how that was figured out years ago. But anyways, here is the Corps of Engineers, the alternatives that they were considering. They intend to realign the navigational channel through this area of the Mississippi River that they call, Boulanger Slough. Just downstream from Gray Cloud Island. If any of you are familiar with the areas of Gray Cloud Island, there's a lot of aggregate mining going on there. The project is intended to resolve channel maintenance problems. The navigational channel is described in a Corps of Engineer publication, which was part of your packet. Really what they're saying is it's been difficult to maintain the channel because of increased sedimentation that's been happening over the years. And they've been having increasing episodes of groundings of barges, and that has required reduced tow sizes, which of course affects the economic viability of the each tow. And it's also caused the United States Coast Guard to have to go out there and replace their navigation aids, their buoys, because it's been really tough to navigate this channel, and the barges. The tows, they're running over the buoys and tearing them up. So the Coast Guard has been going out to have to replace them. So the maintenance costs have been increasing over time. So what this is going to do, it will be their chosen alternative, at least their preferred alternative, I should say, is to redredge so that it's a straight line for the big barge tows rather than doing this really wide turn like that. They've decided that they do want to go ahead with this and that while they're going to be doing an EA, the Dakota County would be the RGU on this, and I'll get into that a little bit. And the county has requested that the EQB redesignate somebody else as the RGU. They've asked for the DNR. To be the RGU on it. It's sort of a quirk of the environmental rules that the Here's the excerpt of the rule right here. When there's an impact on wetlands and public waters to a certain degree, the local government shall be the responsible governmental unit. The rule was written based on a typical situation where there's like a development project or something like that going on along a stream or a river, and the reason for the impacts on the water is caused by the project over which the local city or county or something would be the primary governmental unit that would be approving the project. It's what was in mind when that subpart 27 was written. Once in a while, we run into a project like this one where we've got, for example, a federal agency doing a project. The rule, the state rule, says that the local government, in this case Dakota County, would be the RGU to prepare an environmental review, but the county has absolutely no approval authority over the project. So it's a little strange. It doesn't quite work. So they've asked that the EQB redesignate another governmental unit as the responsible governmental unit for the project. A little excerpt from the part of the rule that says the EQB may designate a different RGU when the EQB determines that the designee has greater expertise in analyzing the potential effects of the project. Because the DNR has authority for issuing permits in public waters, because they have a greater expertise than Dakota County does on the different environmental impacts, we thought it was appropriate that the DNR be designated as the responsible governmental unit for this project. So the action before you today is to approve the resolution, which approves the findings, conclusions, and order reassigning RGU duties to the Department of Natural Resources. So just to briefly to go through, if you can turn to the resolution and findings, I thought I might just point out the main, maybe the most important findings. Under findings of fact, the first one, it just talks about that the Corps of Engineers intends to realign the channel. It's described in a specific publication. Finding number five, the proposed activity is a governmental action and it is a project under the state environmental review rules. Therefore, we do have jurisdiction over this. The Mississippi River is a public water under statute. And the mandatory categories finding number nine, again, shows that for wetlands and public waters, typically it's the local governmental unit that would be the RGU. Finding number 11, EQB did receive a request from Dakota County, which is in your packet as well, a letter requesting that they reassign the RGU duties to the DNR. Number 12, again, the EQB may designate a new RGU if it determines the designee has greater expertise analyzing the potential impacts of the project. So recommendation from staff is that the EQB find that the DNR does have greater expertise than Dakota County, and that the order would be the EQB hereby designates the DNR as a responsible governmental unit for the project. And by the way, we did receive a memo from the DNR agreeing to take on these duties. So both sides are in agreement on that. So with that, staff would recommend approval of the resolution and the findings, conclusions, and order.
Thank you, Jeff. Is there questions for Jeff? Seeing none, the resolution is also included in your packet.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Stein.
Staff recommendation on the findings of fact, conclusion of law, and the resolution that's been prepared.
You've heard the motion. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
There is. Further discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair.
John?
In the resolution, is that a typo indicating that designating the Environmental Quality Board?
Oh. You're kidding me. Did I do that? My mistake. Thank you very much.
Prior resolutions.
Good catch. Is right there, John.
Good job.
Yeah, that's an agreeable amendment.
Somebody's reading this.
I did.
Ooh, yes.
You know, it'd be strange if the person who wrote it would read it.
So maybe a friendly amendment.
Friendly amendment would be good, Commissioner Stein.
Yes. We'll move the, I'll agree to change the words on this, on the be it resolved line of this, that we substitute the Department of Natural Resources for the Environmental Quality Board as the responsible governmental unit.
You've heard the motion. Is there a second?
There is.
Is there further discussion on the motion? Not all those in favor say aye.
No, we do a roll call. Excuse me.
Oh, we do a roll call
sorry.
On this. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
All right.
All right. I will call the roll. Commissioner Clark Sieben.
Aye.
Commissioner Kronk is not present. Commissioner Ellinger.
Aye.
Commissioner Fredrickson.
Yes.
Mr. Chair. Ms. Gehring.
Aye.
Ms. Knuth.
Aye.
Commissioner Landwehr.
Aye.
Commissioner Knapstad?
Aye.
Mr. Saxog?
Aye.
Commissioner Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Tomlinson?
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There are 10 ayes. The motion passes.
The motion prevails. All right. Jeff, you're going to take us to the discussion regarding Fillmore, Houston, and Winona County Silica Sand Facility EIS update, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, now this one we definitely did designate the EQV as the RGU, just to be clear on that. You will recall that the board did do that last month, or a couple months ago, right? A number of silica sand mines have been proposed in three counties, Fillmore, Houston, and Winona. All three counties asked us to designate somebody to be the RGU to conduct an environmental impact statement, basically a phased action EIS on sand facilities in those counties. We have been doing a little background work. Today I did send out an email to the project proposer's representative, his consultant, with a list of some potential meeting dates between now and the beginning of the middle of June. There are two dates in May and three possible dates in June to do the initial meeting, get the scoping process going. We'll wait and see which dates work for them. We said, you know, you can meet here. We could meet at his consultant's office over in St. Paul. I think they're over on Energy Park Drive, or we could go down to perhaps the PCA's offices down in Rochester and meet them down there, sort of up to them. So we'll see how they respond to that. The purpose of that meeting would be to discuss the overall process, how the EIS is going to work procedurally, what the timelines would be, what the roles of the different stakeholders might be. I mean, we've got three counties who are involved already. You know, what do they want to do? Do they want to be involved? Do they just want to step back? I mean, they do have, you know, they do possibly have some roles in this that they could participate in pulling together data, things like that. Talk about those things. Really just get the ball rolling on the talking about the issues and things. After that, we'll be setting up another meeting, more meetings that will, at which we will be able to get a little more definitive and make some decisions, cost estimate, how we're going to handle the funding, things like that. There will be an EIS project manager that needs to be hired to manage this project. The Pollution Control Agency people have almost finished that position description. That should be posted very soon. I want to get that rolling as well. Theoretically, it'd be nice to have that person in place before we set up the meeting, but we just have to get this moving. So it's really sort of a parallel process, and then they'll just sort of be merged when that person is hired or designated. So that's really where we're at on it right now. There have been a number of stories in different media about how Minnesota Sands, as a partnership, corporation, business, whatever, has reduced. Different investors have left because, ostensibly, according to the media reports, because the St. Charles area sand processing facility isn't going to happen. Minnesota Sands had a proposal for the city of St. Charles to annex land well outside the boundaries of that municipality, land on which a new, very large processing facility would be built that would handle the sand from these different mines. The city of St. Charles decided not to proceed with that. They did not. They voted to not proceed with the annexation process, pretty much put an end to that project, I guess. So what Minnesota Sands is going to do, are they going to actually mine all these different sites that they're talking about before that all has to be determined? And at the same time, that's part of the scoping of the EIS, because just because they're not going to mine something this year or next year doesn't mean it shouldn't be included as one of the phased actions that can be expected to occur in the very near future. So that's all got to be part of the discussion that's going to happen. It will be an interesting project, I guarantee you that. You know, there's a lot of moving parts, and the variables are multiple and as yet undefined. So it's going to be interesting. We'll certainly keep you informed. And the different agencies, I really want to thank Commissioner Stein's agency, particularly Myrna Halbeck, for helping us on this. She has been over the legislature writing up all sorts of financial documents and the different legislation proposals, as well as trying to do what's necessary to get this EIS going. So she's really been putting in a lot of time to help us out on that. So I want to thank Myrna for that as well. And that's where we're at. Certainly field any questions if you have any.
Questions for Jeff? Seeing none, thank you, Jeff.
Mr. Chair, I have one question. Jeff, you talked about the city potentially looking at annexing a parcel of property that was well outside the municipal boundaries. I'm assuming that would be for the purpose of making the city council the responsible governmental unit. Would that have been the purpose of that annexation?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, as I understand it, Minnesota Sands was interested in doing in having their facility, their processing facility, within municipal jurisdiction because they wanted to use city water on the facility. How that would have worked volume wise and things like that sort of left my head spinning, because St. Charles was not that big a city. I mean, for all I know, the sand processing facility would use more water than the city needed. You know, I mean, it's a pretty water-intensive process. So I think that was the main thing, as well as having a, let's say, a jurisdictional history of a municipality making decisions on land use decisions that perhaps the township wasn't as familiar with. So I think they wanted to do that. The town was not interested in, oh, here's another thing. I guess you could call it political. The township was not interested in having this facility. So if the corporation or the partnership could have had the city annex the property, then they would have eliminated the opposition from the township board, which wasn't going to allow it. But as soon as it becomes within the city, the township board is out of the picture, and it's up to the city council to make
the decision. So the answer to your question, Brian, is yes.
Yeah, all those things.
Well, I guess the crux of the question,
go the path of least resistance,
would really be from an EQB or an environmental permitting perspective, whether it's the township or the city or the county, who's the RGU. From our perspective, the permitting process is the same.
Yes, that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I think that's true. The that processing facility, there was quite a bit of discussion at the MPCA and with Kate and I about that processing facility, who was the RGU. I mean, they wanted the city to buy that. Somebody wanted the city to be the RGU, but it wasn't within the city yet. So the city had no authority over it until after they annexed it. But there is this thing, well, they're going to be the ones, so why don't we have them do it? It doesn't quite work under the rules, you know. It's like, who's got it now? And that would have been the county. And so it kind of went round and round and round. It was an interesting exercise and discussion. It turns out to be moot because the city decided not to go ahead with it after all. But it was an interesting discussion, and it really sort of brought up a number of the issues that exist with the silica sand industry itself. You know, you've got mining, you've got processing, you've got transportation, loading, all these different things going on. It's not simple. It's not just a site where this is happening. So that was, for in a lot of ways, sort of an introduction to this is complex. This is not easy. This is going to be fun.
Other questions,
Mr. John? Chair, Jeff. What relationship would there be between what EQB is doing here and what's happening at the legislature? Would that have an impact on what the EQB is doing here?
Jeff?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, with the caveat that I'm not intimately familiar with what the legislature adopted, the EIS goes ahead as the EIS. It's really not affected, as far as I know, by anything that I've heard coming out of the legislature. Again, I have not been following them like Bob Patton has and some of you. I haven't heard anything that would affect or change how we would go about the EIS. I think the thing that would potentially change the EIS is, as the scoping discussions proceed, what exactly are we going to include in the scope of the project? That's really going to be what affects what happens with the EIS. I haven't heard anything at the legislature that would affect it. I may be wrong.
Mr. Stein.
Mr. Chair, the only thing that I would amend to what Jeff just said, which is correct, is if there were to be one of the mining sites that were within a mile of designated trout streams, they would have to also go through the DNR's permitting process as a result if the legislation passes and becomes law.
Thank you.
That's right.
Thanks, Jeff. Kate? EQB's role and authorities under Environmental Review Program. Thank you, Jeff. Welcome, Kate.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, my name is Kate France, and I am EQB staff. And today I am going to talk to you about the EQB roles and authorities under the Environmental Review Program as set out by the Rules 4410. So recently there has been a lot of discussion in front of this board as well as in front of other bodies about what exactly the board's role is under the Environmental Review Program, and...
Could I stop you? Where did you get that picture of Tom Landwehr?
Mr. Chair, that was when I had hair.
Oh! That's what that green stuff is.
Part, I apologize, yeah.
Notice it was a wonderful shade of green, too.
I'm sorry.
You'll get yours.
That's right.
Angry, here I come.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
So, just as we saw today, we had a couple of points of business that will relate to what we're talking about, but mostly I just wanted to make sure that even though this may be review for some of our board members, that we're all on the same page about what the EQB does according to Rules 4410. So our focus today, like I've already said, is the Minnesota Rules Chapter 4410, which defines the procedures to be followed to be consistent with Minnesota Statutes 116D, which outlines the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act, or MEPA. So Minnesota Rules 4410 provides oversight of the Environmental Review Program in Minnesota and defines the roles and authorities of the EQB and the EQB chair. I've organized the roles and authorities identified in the rules into five categories, which are laid out in your handout, which was included on the last page of your packet. It's a two-sided page. And it's in five categories that we'll walk through today. Also, for your reference, if you're looking for the original rules on these, all of what I'm talking about is paraphrased and at a fairly high level. If you're looking for the greater detail, check out the reviser, state.min.us/rules, and search for Rules 4410, and you'll get the full text. So just to make sure that we're using the same dictionary today, let's work through just a handful of terms and acronyms that are pertinent to the program, starting out with an EAW, or an Environmental Assessment Worksheet. Hopefully we're all on the same page about this, but just to make sure we know, this is a project-specific environmental review document, which is meant to be a brief review. The EQB has the form, which is 31 questions, and it's for a proposed project for a governmental decision that needs to be made. EAWs are mandatory for certain types of projects for certain sizes, but can also be done on a discretionary basis. Second is the RGU, the Responsible Government Unit. This is the entity responsible for conducting the environmental review and is commonly the entity that approves the project as a whole or is making the governmental decision, such as issuing a permit. An EIS, or an Environmental Impact Statement, is a more in-depth review of a specific project and is either required because a project meets a size threshold or it is found to have potential, the potential for significant environmental effects via the EAW process. Just a couple more terms to make sure we're on the same page. Adequacy is a determination by an RGU for an environmental review, that is, for an EIS or an AUAR, that it is sufficient and complete. Following the determination of adequacy, an RGU may move forward with other governmental approvals, such as the permitting or zoning decisions. An EAW does not need to be determined adequate because that is the initial step before the EIS process, and only an EIS or an AUAR need to be determined adequate. Okay, moving on. The Alternative Urban Area-Wide Review, or AUAR, is an alternative form of review which can be used for larger areas undergoing development. AUARs are not project-specific, and at least one scenario must be consistent with the comprehensive plan for the area. This process, even though it's not project-specific, can be compared in terms of process, public involvement, that type of thing, to the EIS process. And finally, the last term we'll talk about is a petition. And for us, a petition is a document that's prepared and signed by more than 100 people in Minnesota who either live or own property in Minnesota that requests an EAW to be conducted for a specific project based on the petitioner's concerns that the project may have potential for significant environmental effects. An EIS or an AUAR cannot be petitioned for. Okay. So, moving to the handout that I provided in your packet, like I said, it's coordinated into five categories, so we'll just walk through those quickly, the first being program oversight. So under the review program, first we have the board has the responsibility for reviewing and amending Minnesota Rules, Chapter 4410. As you may recall from the mandatory categories report that Jeff presented a few months ago, as well as the current discussion regarding silica sand legislation, mandatory categories and their thresholds for requiring EAWs and EISs are a part of Minnesota Rules 4410 that are commonly under scrutiny. And Chapter 4410 has undergone multiple revisions on multiple occasions since their initial drafting. EQB staff are now poised to begin a new rulemaking process as a result of both the mandatory categories report as well as the actions from the legislature. And these steps included in rulemaking will likely become coming before the board in the coming months, so stay tuned for that. Second is to create and update the EAW form, which is a standardized worksheet for all projects for all RGUs. There is one exception, which is for animal feedlots, which is a customized form, but otherwise, RGUs must use the standard EAW form for their projects. Revisions of the form have occurred, and tailoring of the EAW form to other specific industries have been discussed, but no other industry-specific EAW forms have received approval from the board. While the rule specifically gives the authority of approving this form to the board chair, historically the chair has sought concurrence from the board before revising the form. And again, that form is the 31 questions that all projects at the EAW level go through. Finally, the board is responsible for approving alternative forms of environmental review upon request of the responsible government units, which are completing environmental reviews under other processes that are substantially similar to the state's process. For example, the board has approved an alternative review process for use by MnDOT for projects that are receiving federal funding. And in addition, the pipeline permitting and environmental review process undertaken by PUC and Department of Commerce is another example of an alternative form of environmental review. So next section on your sheet is regarding determining and assigning an RGU. The first situation where the EQB or staff designee determines the RGU is under a petition situation. And first, staff, of course, must determine if the petition is complete or not. And if it is determined to be complete, the EQB staff forwards the petition to the appropriate RGU. The RGU is determined based on, as we were discussing at the last item, based on whether the project falls under any of the mandatory categories, even if the project does not meet any of the thresholds. So that's according to 0500, as Jeff was talking about. The second situation where EQB can determine the project, the RGU for the project, is when the RGU is in question and the potential responsible government units, the RGUs, request that the EQB determine the appropriate RGU. The EQB can determine the RGU based on which entity has the greatest responsibility for the project or the greatest expertise that is relevant for the environmental review. We just saw this. Finally, the EQB can, at its discretion, redesignate the RGU for a project based on another entity having greater expertise in analyzing the potential impacts for the project. This can apply to a project anywhere in the state, but the redesignation cannot occur after the EAW process has been initiated or completed by another RGU. So this example was such as the EQB taking redesignation of the EIS. Next piece is ordering a review. The EQB can order a review in two situations, either for a discretionary EAW or for a generic environmental impact statement. Under a discretionary EAW, it can be a project anywhere in the state that the EQB determines has the potential for significant environmental effects, whether it exceeds a mandatory category threshold or not. Historically, this authority has been used extremely infrequently, and one case occurred at a time when the state did not yet have any regulations for genetically modified organisms, and in that case, that was the first planned field trial of genetically modified organisms, so it was used in that case, but historically very rare. Secondly is the GEIS situation, which most of us have seen that in recent months regarding the silica sand request for a GEIS. And historically, as we've discussed, that has occurred on three different occasions where the EQB has been the RGU for that GEIS is in two occasions for the forestry and timber harvesting GEIS and animal agriculture GEIS. The third was a study, was a water resources project in the Red River Basin for which the DNR served as the state RGU in coordination with the Corps of Engineers. So one of the final ones is determining adequacy of a review. And this, again, can occur in two situations, this time for an EIS or an AUAR, because those are the two situations where a review is determined adequate or not. Under the EIS process, if in any case of an EIS, the EQB can determine that the final EIS is inadequate, meaning that the RGU would have 60 days to prepare an adequate EIS, basically to fix the issues that were described to be inadequate in the EIS. The revised EIS must be circulated in the same manner as the finalized one and must in order to be deemed adequate. Historically, the board has taken over responsibility only a few EISs, including one in 2006, the Blue Heron Bay EIS in Otter Tail County. Similarly, in the case of an AUAR.
Okay, before you leave that, can you explain why the EQB might take over that adequacy determination?
Absolutely. For an EIS, if an agency or if there are parties that are disagreeing on whether a determination for an EIS has been adequate by the RGU, they can either appeal to the EQB, and the EQB can choose to step in or not. And I don't know if Mr. Bob Patton wants to add anything to that or
I was just looking it up myself. So, Commissioner, good question. And I think in the cases that this has been done, it's been by the request of somebody. What the rule says is shall determine the adequacy of the final, or the RGU shall determine the adequacy of the final EIS unless notified by the EQB or its own initiative or at the request of the RGU, the proposer of the project, or other interested persons, that the EQB will determine the adequacy. So it can be a request from other interested persons, the proposer, the RGU itself. I'm not sure if the EQB can initiate it by itself.
Mr. Chairman, so a follow-up question, but is at the discretion of the EQB?
And shall intervene only if the EQB determines the RGU will be unable to provide an objective appraisal if the project involves complex issues where the RGU lacks the technical ability or the project has multi-jurisdictional effects. So there are some criteria there.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and similarly, the same process would be followed for an AUAR, except for an AUAR, it would be in response to if an agency objected to the finalized AUAR process, then again, that objecting agency can bring that request, that appeal, to the EQB, and the EQB can respond by determining the adequacy or not of the AUAR. And I did not find any record of the EQB stepping in in regard to an AUAR decision.
Mr. Chair, real quick, Kate, just on the language, it says specifically in that AUAR portion, the agency, objecting agency, and I'm wondering the definition of agency. When I think of agency, I think of governmental agencies.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Chair, members of the board, Mr. Tomlinson, the distribution process of the AUAR is a little bit unique in that there are specific agencies that are involved in the review process, and of course there's a full list of them for EAWs and EISs as well. But for the AUAR, the finalization process is a shortened process, 10 days instead of 30 days, which is most common. And that primarily goes to the agencies that are involved, and as well as anyone who had commented on the AUAR process. And so, at that point, the agencies would be those that were involved. But I think also there might be, if you look to the rule specifically, that would be helpful. And I don't actually have that in front of me, but we can talk more about that offline if you have more questions.
Thank you.
So maybe ask that question to Kate.
Well, we did.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry, I was looking something else up.
So all right.
I wasn't paying attention.
Shall I press on? Okay.
Press on.
All right. So the final category is the unique actions. These are very rare actions that have only historically taken place on a couple of occasions, the first being the variance from the prohibition on governmental decisions. Of course, when an environmental review is in process, the prohibition on governmental decisions applies where no other governmental decisions, permitting, zoning, other types of decisions can occur while that environmental review is in progress. So a RGU can request from the board a variance from that, either as a variance or as an emergency action to have an authorization to proceed. Neither of them. We have just a couple of occasions in the past where that has been authorized, but that's very, very rare. And then finally, something that Bob mentioned a month or two ago regarding the EIS cost disagreements, where if there is a project proposer and an RGU disagree about the cost of an EIS, either one may request that the EQB determine the cost to be included in the cost agreement, and the board has only needed to take action on this in one specific case. So, again, all of these are very, very rare situations. So, and just to, as a footnote, in addition to the board and the strategic planning, these are the roles that staff provide to facilitate the environmental review program, just as a kind of bullet point. And if you have any further questions, I'd love to entertain them. Otherwise, if you have other questions offline, please go ahead and give either Jeff or myself a call.
Commissioner Stein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I actually asked some questions early on when we were debating before the request from the three counties came forward on silica sand mining. whether or not the board had any role in intervening in decisions that a responsible governmental unit makes with which the board takes issue. And I think that was one of the questions that led us down this conversation today. But I wanted to ask Ms. France, it strikes me that the answer to that question, now that I look at this list and you did a great job of outlining all these categories, it would seem like the board could have come forward with a discretionary EAW document. I'm thinking of the circumstance. What we were debating at the time is, what if we think that the actions of multiple units of government are connected? And the local units of government, who are the responsible governmental units, didn't determine that. And how would we then intervene in that situation? That didn't turn out to need to be the case in this one, but it strikes me as I look at this list that we might have had to conducted our own discretionary EAW on connected actions. Am I reading that correctly, Kate or Mr. Patton? Because I think that's what partly started this conversation, is what's our role when we don't think the RGU made the right call.
Kate or Bob?
Kate. Mr. Chair, Commissioner Stein, one of the things that I would caution you on that, just in going down that path, is that while EAWs should include the entire scope of a project, and so the determination of project is critical there, an EAW by its very nature is a project-specific document. So that would be a critical component to make that determination. Where we are, as you said, is down the road of going toward an EIS, so that's water under the bridge. But that's a critical component to remember in that. Also, remembering that a discretionary EAW does not necessarily mean that the EQB itself is the RGU for that. So it could be that the EQB determines that, a project-specific EAW is necessary, and then who the appropriate RGU would be. So I think that there are some avenues that direction, but keeping those critical components in mind.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair and Commissioner Stein, I guess to directly answer your question, yes, that is an option that the EQB could or could have exercised. I am not frankly aware of the EQB exercising that option. And so one of the, and I believe we did talk about that internally and among agencies as far as whether that was an option that should be pursued, but it is something that that conceivably could be pursued.
Thank you.
Sure.
Further questions? If not, thank you very much, Kate. Bob?
Mr. Chair and members, I wanted to answer Eric's question in terms of finally found the answer to it in terms of definition of agencies for the taking over the adequacy decision. So there's a distribution of the document to state agencies and the Metropolitan Council, and they have 10 days to review it and can file an objection. And so the other references to agencies refer to apparently state agencies and the Met Council.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Patton. I just didn't have that on the tip of my tongue.
I know. I had to look it up.
Mr. Chair, I'm reflecting on Commissioner Stein's question, and as I recall the conversation, or recall the hypothetical situation you're suggesting, that if an RGU did not view these as connected actions, as individual projects, that there could have been a disagreement with that decision.
Right.
And I believe, it's been a while since I've actually had a hands-on on an EAW, but I believe an EAW does have a question regarding cumulative impact. So we could the connected actions disagreement could go by the wayside, and then during the EAW process, if cumulative impact were not taken into consideration in the EAW, it would essentially be doing the same thing, looking at cumulative impacts in the area.
Yep.
So there would be different ways to address that.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. Ellen? Ellen is going to give us a little update on the Governor's Institute on Community Design Workshop that was held.
But first, you have an
announcement to make.
Somebody who has a birthday
today. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Kate. Happy birthday to you.
Environmentally unfriendly packaging. I have a lot of time to shop.
Thank you, Ellen. And
really look like you appreciate this.
I do appreciate it. It's nice to be able to just celebrate on my birthday and not have any other responsibilities.
Not be over there.
No conference committee for you. That's great. Well,
if you want, you could share those cupcakes.
I would like to share them.
You don't have to.
Happy birthday, after all. Thank you.
Happy birthday. All right.
Ellen?
Great. Yes, we are way ahead of schedule, too. I am not going to take two more hours.
That's just good. That's good news.
So enjoy your cupcakes, and I'll be done. So I'm just giving a brief update. We had a very good all-day-long meeting, as you all know. I know a couple of you couldn't be there, but we had really, really good attendance for almost the whole day from the whole board, and that was really terrific with GICD. Great conversations, covering a lot of key issues, energy and climate, water and water legacy in particular, land development and transportation issues. So it was a really good conversation, and we're looking forward to seeing what comes next. What the Governor's Institute people plan to do next is to come back to you all with a very brief, they call it a letter, somewhere between a letter and a report, so it will be brief. And what they're going to do is send out what they consider draft action items and next steps based on everything they heard in the conversation, and they are going to send this to you well before the next meeting so that you can read it and be prepared to walk in at the next meeting and hopefully take some action. So what they intend to include in this is action steps in priority order based on what they heard, as well as some summary of what resources and time frame would be involved in those action steps. So that'll be a really helpful summary. I would think it'll just be a couple of pages. And they ask that at the end of the meeting, the EQB hopefully would be in some sort of agreement as to which steps to proceed on, if any. That's really the plan as I know it. It's very simple, and we have scheduled the second day, which is a half-day meeting, for June 20th. It's 11:30 to 3:30. You should all have this marked on your calendar now. It will be at the same room in the Veterans Service Building. I know apologies to Commissioner Clark Sieben, who will be on a trade mission with the governor. I don't remember in particular who else, if there's anyone else who cannot attend, but it was definitely the best date. Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Ellinger, that's right. It was the best date for the majority of board members by the end of June, and we really didn't want to wait longer than that. So so that's that, and then they say at the end of the meeting on the 20th that they will write some sort of final report reflecting what's the agreement that's reached. And I should say, along the same lines of final reports, a lot of staff have been working on compiling the results from the citizen forums, the results from the Congress, all of that documentation and all that public input. We've talked about that as along the way quite a bit, and that has all been posted online on the Congress website. And we made really good use at this last meeting of that summary from the forums and the summary from the Congress. And so I think it's safe to say that the discussion really used that as the jumping off point. And that's really what the citizens expected. And I think you all really honored that process and that public engagement in your discussion. And there will be a final EQB staff report at the end of this process, which we hope will be June 30th, will be sort of the end of something, maybe the beginning of something, I don't know, but that'll be sort of our deadline for wrapping up the culmination of the executive order and the public engagement process and a final report that'll reflect all of that in a combined form. And we have that mostly done already, but we'll wait until the 20th of June to finish it. Are there any questions about that?
Questions? Go ahead.
Sorry, just one more thing I was going to mention. I think with a couple of the commissioners, you may not at this point have tech reps in your agencies. And if any of you don't have a tech rep for EQB, it would be great if you can find someone to appoint to do that, especially in light of if you won't be at the meeting, it's great to have their presence and their participation in this process. So I just want to encourage that. Because they play such an important role in keeping everyone connected and advising commissioners. Let's see. The only other thing, follow-up thing I wanted to mention is that we had a conference call with our University of Morris intern, Natalie Hoidel, who did such a great job on helping with the forums and really catalyzing the Next Generation Congress and doing a lot of that outreach and organizing, and her supervisor at Morris. And she's going to continue in a role of sort of doing coordinating work across the university campuses with students. And we talked about follow-up steps, and we've also talked with some of the other participants in the Next Generation group. And it's been suggested and requested that the EQB think, and I think, Commissioner Stein, you suggested this, that there be some kind of ongoing opportunity to have a dialogue or advice from students or that next generation group of people, however we define them, to have maybe an advisory board or some kind of collaborative that has an ongoing, that goes on for a while so that we can check in and the board can check in with them and hear from them now and then as you move forward. So just interested to hear what you all think.
Yeah, thanks, Ellen, for the reminder. What I am curious about is under our governing structure, is there any kind of way to utilize that group of students as a resource to the board, whether it's as Ellen said, an advisory committee or just a group of ex officio members, or I don't know what it actually would be, but what I see everywhere I go in my capacity as an aging bureaucrat is that, you know, I'm looking for youth to pick up this interest and continue it.
And Prince said yesterday he didn't have time for old people. It's in the paper.
Well, I don't have time for Prince, but I have time for that group of folks. Sorry. Sorry, for those of you that are Prince fans, I'm sorry, Kate. I know that's a tough one for you, okay? I got time for Neil Young, but I don't have time for...
I'm still with Pete Seeger.
The suburbs were really great last night, by
awesome.
The way. Downtown.
So anyway, I just... I did ask the question of Ellen and thought maybe we as a board should consider that so that we don't just sort of part ways after the Congress and fault, let entropy occur again, and really keep some connection to that group from the Next Generation Congress and their membership that might have a really beneficial role for us in the future.
Well, let me also indicate that we're working diligently to employ Anna Sherman, who is terming out here. Her contract is basically up in June, and so she'll become a full-time employee of the Department of Agriculture, and I haven't talked to her about this, but it seems to me that she'd be kind of a logical person to embrace that. Yeah, hopefully she accepts. Yeah,
nice call.
Yeah.
Nice call.
Yeah.
Better
put some good compensation down, Commissioner.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Well, she's aware of the fact that we're working on this, but I would think that you know, that could be something we could incorporate in her job description. What do you think about that, huh?
Think about that. Sure.
See how easy it was. Yeah. Not to
put you on.
Yeah. But I mean, that would be.
The minutes.
Yeah, there you go.
Good idea. Why didn't I think of that? Yeah. Great. All right. Well, we'll think on it, and if you have any other thoughts, otherwise, we'll just figure it out.
Other questions? We might also add how appreciative we all were that folks took the time to be at the event. I know it was a busy time for people, and the Governor's Initiative folks were extremely pleased with the folks that took the time to be there. I found former Governor Glenn Denning to be just a lot of fun, and I really appreciated his involvement all day long, as well as the other staff. So again, thank you to all of you who took the time to be there. It was important.
Yeah, they I think they brought some really great expertise and experience to the table, and they spent a lot of time really and read all these reports that we sent them ahead of time. So they really have dug in, and so I think they'll hopefully have something really helpful to offer to us. And it was also terrific to have the chief of staff, the governor's chief of staff, Tina Smith, there, and she added a lot to the conversation as well.
Tina Smith did a great job. So, other comments or questions regarding Brian?
I guess, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ellen, thank you and your staff for setting that up, because that was really a great session. And they facilitated a really great discussion amongst this board, and it was wide-ranging. I guess one of the points we made later on in the day that we talked a little bit about, I wish we had more time to dwell on it, but we could have gone on for days, I'm sure, was the fact that we have this constitutional amendment regarding, you know, taxes for clean water and the environment and so on. And I think they were pretty impressed with that fact. And we had many conversations that seemed to be steering towards climate change. And yet we have a majority of Minnesotans voting on this clean water issue. And I would really like to see more conversation, or at least some suggestions from the GCID on how we can advance our cause for water over the limited amount of time we have left. 20 years sounds like a long time, but it'll be gone in a flash that this amendment is monies are either up for renewal or gone. So it would be great if we could continue down that path of discussion. You know, we touched on the number of agencies and people who touch water policy in the state and who's responsible for what. It's clearly something that the citizens have a great deal of interest in. I'm not suggesting for a moment that all the other things don't have equal interest, but this is one that we can look at a vote and say, hey, the people want to spend money on that. Let's do it.
Mr. Chair, if regarding that point, I appreciate you making it today and at the workshop, I wish we had more time to discuss it at the workshop. One of the things that I've talked about with Commissioner Fredrickson and Ms. Anderson is the water governance study that was done, and that I've been reading it on the bus actually, gotten pretty much through it all, and it's I think it's really a worth reading, and I think it's worth the board spending some time with. I would propose, regardless of how the recommendations come out with the GICD, that we may want to take some time on a future board agenda to really dig into that and talk about the structure of water governance in Minnesota. So I'd just offer that as a thought for the board for later.
Bring it on. And Mr. Chair, as well, in response to Commissioner Navstad, I think in our follow-up conversations with GICD, they clearly saw that as one of the main takeaways of the conversation as well, the clean water legacy discussion that we had. So they didn't miss that, and I know that's on their radar. I mean, it's ultimately going to be up to the board to decide you know, what do you want to do and where do you want to focus your time and effort? And that's there's a lot of really important issues on the table, so we'll see.
I want to acknowledge Bill Grant, Commissioner. Good to see you. Any other questions or comments or concerns? If not, the motion to adjourn would be in order.
So move.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There is. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. The meeting is adjourned.